Welcome to the Junior NBA Coach's Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes Charlotte Hornets assistant coach, Jay Hernandez, and top NBA skills trainer and co-founder of Unlimited Potential Basketball, Packy Turner. Now, here is your host, Jay Billis.
Welcome to Junior NBA Coach's Corner. And today our topic is skill development for your team. And we've got two great guests today. Jay Hernandez, an assistant coach with the Charlotte Hornets. He also was an assistant with the Orlando Magic, played his college basketball at Hofstra for Jay Wright. And also Packy Turner, who is an NBA skills trainer, co-founder of Unlimited Potential Basketball. And he's got an impressive portfolio of NBA clients that he has trained over the years and actually started his training career as a high school player, if you can believe that. And actually, Packy, let's start there. I want to ask you just about your start in the game and your start in coaching. How did you become a skills trainer really in high school?
I'm from a small town and 7,000 people in my hometown, and we don't get access to a lot of stuff. You know, YouTube wasn't even really a thing when I was in high school. So you go to one camp every summer. That's what my parents let me do. And I kind of took notes and just studied it and came back and, you know, I took it upon myself to try to make my teammates better. So when I went in the gym at 6 a.m., I was bringing guys with me and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. You know, this is what I was able to pick up. This is what I was able to learn, and I wanted to help everyone get better. So that's when I kind of got really into it, and I didn't realize it back then that that's what I was really doing. You know, later I was like, oh, wow, I've been doing this for a while, actually. But that's how it kind of started for me, and that's when I clicked that I really enjoy that part of the game.
Who inspired you to do that as maybe a mentor?
Well, definitely my high school coach. I mean, he gave us unlimited access. You know, he left the key around, you know, said, hey, I might have dropped something here. If you guys find it, you might want to hold on to that. It was, you know, the old school way. And he was very encouraging and wanted to go through the notebook of everything I took and said, hey, this is what fits. Let's work on this. Hey, so-and-so could use this. And he kind of helped me break it down and see, okay, yep, I got to make sure it fits within what we do and make sure it makes sense for the guys working on it. You know, we were a team with not a lot of size, so everyone kind of had to have some guard skills and things like that. You know, I think our big, my sophomore and junior year was 6'2". So, you know, we weren't huge, but, you know, it was just, we all wanted to get better. We all wanted to put in the time. And so it definitely helped.
Jay, how about you? How did you get your start in the game, and what inspired you to get into coaching and make it your life's work?
I started loving the game early. My father played 13 years professionally in Puerto Rico, made the national team there. So earlier years from about 2 to 7, I lived there. I was a ball boy mascot running around the canchas there, the little arenas, hot arenas, and enjoying the process. So I've always been in love with the game. Playing high school ball at St. Dominic was great for me. My high school coach, similar to Tom Tarantino, did a great job of helping me develop. And when I got to college, obviously Jay Wright is a stickler for details. So I just love working with other players. So whenever we did camps, I was a camp counselor throughout high school as well. I just love teaching. So my father was the first, I guess, player development guy in Long Island at Island Garden, which was part of the Long Island Lightning AAU program, which is now, I believe, one of the biggest AAU programs in the country. And I was on a side basket helping him out back in 1998 and realized I enjoyed doing it. And I started getting my own clients. A lot of the kids that I got at that time were accustomed to training in tennis or getting a baseball pitching coach. The better players in New York were like, I'm already nice. Why would I pay for training? That was the mentality at that point in time. So, you know, I had to do a lot in terms of how I developed those kids that weren't very good at that point in time, and it helped me create my terminology, build footwork patterns and things like that. And that helped me become a very good trainer, started my own business, did that for 10 plus years and got the shot at the NBA level. And it was great. Like Packy, I was working with older players. My first NBA guy was Wally Szczerbiak, who I worked with when he got drafted. And, you know, we had played summer league ball together all the way through our professional careers. And, you know, him giving me that opportunity early on gave me the confidence to keep going.
You know, I'm going to ask you about formulating a plan for a player or players or even a team. But I wanted to ask you, Jay, about, and Packy as well, but we'll start with Jay, about the difference between your philosophy of player development and a plan for a specific player. Like, what would you say, Jay, your philosophy of player development is?
My philosophy overall is that accountability and positivity don't have to be two separate entities. I think a lot of times when you talk about accountability, you talk about ownership. And so I want players to own their development. You know, I feel like I'm responsible for their development, and I'm basically somebody who's renting. You know, what I mean by that is that, you know, I'm there. I have to pay rent every month. But ultimately, if I stop paying rent, you know, they have ownership over, you know, what they have to do or who they have to be as a player. And so I want them to take ownership. I want to be positive with them. But with that, you know, comes the truth. So there's no false success in any of our training methods. Because ultimately I want them to have confidence, not in a training session, but I want them to have confidence when they get on the court. So I try to break down barriers from young kids all the way to pro players. It's about making mistakes in practice. I use the term make it ugly all the time. And so make it ugly to me is don't try to come in here looking pretty. If you're not making mistakes, either you're not going hard enough or I'm not challenging you. And neither one of those is good enough. So, you know, we try to make it so that guys are okay making mistakes at the pro level. Guys want to look good all the time. And so if you put them in a group setting and they can't do the things that, you know, you're teaching them, you know, they might get frustrated and say, this is not my game, you know, and they'll just try to move on to something else. So we try to break down those barriers and say, if you aren't doing this, then that's a problem. So I think it's the psyche behind that is very, very important.
I've not heard that before. That's a really good way to put it. Make it ugly. And when you talk about a player's psyche, do you have to consider there are some players that are afraid to make a mistake and that holds them back. How do you deal with that portion of things in training when you're encouraging them to push themselves to where they will make mistakes to get better? Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I think it comes down to, you know, I had somebody come in and get a bloody lip once in a workout because they got hit with an elbow playing one-on-one. And the father said, I sent my player in there, you know, my son, you know, I sent them to the shop to get fixed and they came out with a ding in the rear view bumper, right? And I started laughing. I said, this is not a shop where we're fixing things. This is a shop where we're testing the limits of where your player can go like a race car. You know, those cars are pushing it to the limits and seeing what they can do during their racetrack times before they get onto the actual, you know, into the actual race. So I think it's very important to be able to talk to players in that way and say, hey, we're here. We don't care who else is in the gym as long as you're getting better. And this is part of the process. I'm expecting you to get it done right one time correctly. I'm not expecting you to do it 30 times in a row and not make a mistake. So as long as we can get it that one time in a game situation, we're in the money every single time. So I think the more you do it and the more they see the results over the course of time and practice, they start applying it with a one-on-one setting, two-on-two, three-on-three, small-sided games. And then by the time they get to five-on-five, it's just a natural behavior.
Packy, how about you? What is your philosophy? How do you approach player development?
Yeah, I mean, I would say kind of to piggyback off Jay here is that it's a lot about ownership, right? And for me, it's about, you know, finding your feel. And for Steph Curry or Aaron Gordon, that's going to be very different. Their feel is going to be very different. But if they don't have that, they're not going to know what they need to do. So basically, you know, it's not a shop, like Jay said. They're not coming in and we're fixing something and they're out and they're ready to go. But we're going to give them feedback, right? We're going to help them understand, hey, do you feel when you do this? Do you even know that you do it, right? So I might point something out that like maybe they weren't aware of or they couldn't feel, but just help them have an understanding because I'm not going to be there when they're in a game for every shot they take or everything they do. So it's helping anybody, whether it's a kid, you know, 8 years old or it's somebody who's, you know, in college or the NBA, helping them have an understanding of themselves. So if they can feel it themselves, they can actually replicate it. Right. If they can't feel it, they're not going to be able to do it again. They might do it right, but they don't even know what they were doing. Just kind of got lucky sometimes. Like you see guys in drills go like, oh, yeah, he's got it. But he just kind of is just going through the motions out there. He doesn't really know what he's doing. But he has a good enough skill set that he can kind of get by. So for me, it's a lot about making sure they understand what they're supposed to be using, how they're using it, and getting them to feel that and own it. So that way they could actually go do it again.
Now, you guys work with NBA players, which is a different set of issues for player development. But if you've got a young player that's walking in, that's of high school age or maybe younger, what's the first thing you start with? What's the baseline competency, the baseline skills that you think or the basic skills you think a player needs to have and you need to build with that player? And Packy, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I was always taught if you can't make a layup, if you can't you know, handle the ball and you can't shoot a little bit, that you're not really going to be on the court. And of course, you got to be able to defend. So like, those are our four things. Like, if you want to be in, for me, it's never about who starts. It's about who finishes. So trying to help guys also understand that, like, I don't want to be in the starting lineup. I don't be in the game when there's 30 seconds left and it's a 1-point game. So what do you need to be able to do then? Make a free throw, not turn the ball over, and you got to be able to get a stop. So can we check those boxes? And getting them to have an understanding of that, and just, you know, we'll start with some form shooting to see what their form looks like there, and have them get an understanding of that. But for younger kids, it's a lot of ball handling. If you can't secure the ball, if you can't handle it under pressure, you're not going to be in the game in those settings. So getting them to understand that and make sure they have a good skill set in that area.
Jay, how do you look at that, sort of the baseline competency skills that a player needs to be effective?
It's funny because it doesn't change much from a young kid to the pro level. I know you've watched a lot of pro practices, and the drills are very, very basic. You know, the repetition behind what a pro does is so basic that it's not something that you're a lot of times putting on video for other people to be in shock and awe of, right? So I think at the end of the day, for me, I always started with form shooting with our players. I like to just get them a feel for their shot, different shooting techniques, and get them warmed up there. Same thing with form ball handling, you know, from a concept of being stationary to adding some footwork moves that mirror the basketball as well. So we started adding some components of movement while being in a kind of in a stationary area. And we started branching it out to movement, you know, some maybe one or two skill sets off the move. Finishing is obviously of utmost importance. I mean, we preach all the time in Charlotte to get to the paint, because when you get to the paint, you can start to create a lot of advantages, whether it's at the rim, free throw, or kicking out for threes. So that's huge if you have the ability to finish. Passing and catching is one of the most unheralded aspects of the game. You know, it's amazing how many people can't pass on target or on time. You know, that players that have a hard time where they catch it, they fumble it, and then they try to shoot up, you know, something. So the ability to pass and catch is something really important. And obviously defensively, I think Packy hit on it. I don't think enough skill trainers or coaches spend, you know, more than 10% of their time in that area. I think the better ones can figure out ways to incorporate some kind of defensive component into some shooting component to make it fun and you know, energetic within a practice setting, because guys don't really want to work on their defensive slides in the off season. So being able to mix that in is huge.
Boy, so much great stuff. Let me start with shooting, because both of you mentioned form shooting. And I've always found that shooting technique and form is something that a lot of coaches, I don't want to say are afraid of, but they don't want to mess with players. How do you approach dealing with a player's form and technique, especially when they're younger? Because I liken it to a golf swing, that you have classic, you know, you have classic form and technique, but there are going to be differences in players. Not everybody shoots it like Ray Allen. And you've also got players like Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes, who nobody would argue has classic form, but that thing went in every time. So you don't mess with it. How do you go about teaching technique and then maybe making changes without totally breaking down a player's shot form and confidence, all those things?
It's really just kind of an assessment first of, you know, how big are you going to be? Like, kind of just looking at the parents, like, are we going to struggle with the point that we're shooting it from, that we're like kind of setting it at? Where is that shot pocket lie? And just looking at different things, like, what are the issues? Is it an elbow? Really the ultimate goal, right, is, like you said, to make shots. So if we can make shots at a high level and there's some things that are a little bit wrong, do I want to go and mess up your psyche and your confidence at a young age when you can currently make shots, right? If you're willing to put in the work, but you can already do it at a decent level at a young age, I don't want to go ahead and fully change everything necessarily right now, because you're doing what the end goal is. You're making shots, right? So, and I think that's where, you know, and I've definitely fallen guilty to it before, where it's like, oh, you know, we could make this perfect right now. But again, the end goal is making shots. So if we can help them do that, that's the goal. If somebody's struggling with that and they can't really, and they're not confident, and they have some issues, their elbow's out, they're coming across their body a little bit, we could just clean some things up. And I always think about trying to make it simpler. So it's like a math equation. Would you rather solve for X when shooting or make it 1+1? So let's try to make it 1+1. Let's take as many things out that don't need to be there, and just make it as simple as possible, so it can be one motion and we get that thing in and out.
Jay, how about you?
Yeah, for me, it depends on how much time you have with the player, right? If I know I've only got a player for 2 weeks, it's going to be hard to adjust and change things right there on the fly. I think a lot of players try to do that even throughout the pre-draft process. You see that where all of a sudden, well, the player changed their shot within a month of being with somebody, and they try to showcase that in their pre-draft workouts and things, and they take away from what they were already really good at and why they were there in the first place. So I think it's important to, you know, it's semantics, but instead of changing shots, sometimes it's a matter of making some slight adjustments and telling players, here's the area of adjustment that you need to focus on. And there's certain drills that I know Packy and I do to help those players to get back to point A, where they realize, okay, I'm making this mistake, so I can go back to yelling target practice. It's a cue that gets them back on track. I think there's certain principles that are going to be the same regardless of who you are. So I think balance is huge. You know, how you set up your feet before you get into a shot is a big deal. I think being able to get your hand under the basketball and being on the midline of the ball so that way you can control where the ball goes, whether you're a kid or an adult. And so there's certain concepts that are going to become very consistent. And like you said before, there's so many different types of shots from Ray Allen to, you know, Steph Curry and whoever the greatest shooters of all, Larry Bird. I mean, everything was different in the way they looked, but then the finishes were always on point, whether it was the type of arc they had, they were controlled, the straight line target was always very, very similar. And so I think it's important to be able to talk to those players without them having to overthink their shot, because if they're overthinking it, they're already in trouble. I think that it has to become something that becomes fluid for them. And when they're not thinking about it, that's when we know that you're going to get the best out of them.
Your point about balance is so important, because basketball is a game that's played with your feet. We concentrate so much on the ball, but it's really a game played with your feet. How about footwork and certain drills that you use for footwork, Jay?
Yeah, I think footwork is huge. I mean, you look at any sport, and you know, I've looked at all different types of sports. I've had a background in Muay Thai training. I've done some amateur fights. So I learned a lot from the footwork that comes from boxing styles, obviously soccer. You know, you can incorporate into anything, and the basics of footwork are always there. So you see jump rope, you know, agility ladders, those kinds of things are classics that have never gone away. And so I think it's really important to eliminate the baby fat, especially as you get to the higher levels. For a guy like me, I was never that athletic. I played with a guy like Speedy Claxton, who was a freak athlete. For me to get my shot off, I had to be super clean in my footwork and my approach. And so a lot of times when we're talking about off the bounce, as you start to get more advanced, we would do a lot of concepts called freeze pull-ups, where the inside out, most people will take an inside out move, and then they'll take a 1-2 step after the move. So for me, I wanted to see if I can incorporate the inside out and the 1-2 step all at the same time so I could get my shot off quicker. That way I'm not jumping into the defender and I'm able to maintain the separation. I think a lot of times we talk about creating separation, and I'm also just as big as maintaining separation when you have it. So I think footwork to me is everything when it comes to the way you do your moves, the way you set up for your jump shot. And if all that is clean, you're going to see more baskets being made.
What sort of plan do you have, Packy, for footwork and incorporating footwork into your workouts with players?
Yeah, it really depends on where they play and what they really need to be working on, right? If you got a big, that footwork is going to be a lot different than if it's a guard. And if it's a guard, it's like, okay, we're coming in different sets. You got to probably be able to come off a hop as well as a 1-2. So covering everything a little bit and then working out of a jab, you know, making sure we're comfortable with all that. And for a lot of guards now, it's just making sure they stay low. So talking about that elevator too, you could have great feet, but if you're upright, you can be moved and controlled by a defender. So if we can keep that base level at the first floor of the elevator and we don't ride it up until we're in our shot, we want to stay at that low level so we can control our balance and everything as we're moving on all our different footwork.
And what is your view or philosophy with regard to a pivot foot? Are you more permanent pivot or inside pivot?
You know, I definitely work on both with guys, but ultimately it comes down to when it's really go time, what are you going to use, right? So especially if we're at the higher level, right? If you're at the higher level, what are you going to use when you're here? Okay, if you're in this spot and you're never going to do that, we're not going to rep it X amount of times. We might touch on it because you're going to get stuck sometimes and need to be able to do it, but I don't want 80% of our stuff to be something you're not going to use and you're not comfortable with. So making sure it's something that's like in their wheelhouse and making sure, you know, hey, here's where you did it correctly. Here's where you haven't in the past. And let's make sure we exploit that and get better at it.
How about you, Jay? What's your philosophy on a pivot foot?
Yeah, I've always been a big inside foot, pivot foot guy. You know, I know there's different philosophies, but like Packy, there's certain guys that are more comfortable off the 2 foot catch, and they're pretty good at it. So I've always taught it, especially when I had guys that were playing overseas. You know, we worked on different things on when to put the ball down, but I do like the ability to just come off and inside foot and attack. You know, there's different things that you can do off that, but there are times off the bounce as well. Especially when I had Kemba, you know, a lot of that came down to that dribble pull up. We tried to get to a 2-footed balance stopped off the bounce for him a lot of times, as opposed to a quicker 1-2 that you'd see when you're trying to get a pull up in the mid range. So I think sometimes it depends on where you are, and it comes down to what your go-to finishes are going to be, you know, whether it's at the rim or from the perimeter. So we talk a lot about go-to finishes for players as well at the highest levels.
And Jay, in your work with player development, I'm going to ask both of you this, but you know, basketball is a game of deception. And so how do you incorporate fakes, both ball fakes, shot fakes, into what you do?
Yeah, I think it's real important to incorporate that stuff, but I think it's incorporating the whole picture for the player as to when they're going to use it. So for us, we have the ability to bring in our video coordinators who all played the game, and you know, we did that by design. They're really smart guys that can break down film, but they can get on the court. So we have these guys come out and we create scenarios for the players to say, okay, here we go. Here's a situation where they're coming at you full speed. You're going to have to read it, you know, and so here's a good opportunity for the pump fake, and you got to decide whether you're going left side or right side. Sometimes it's reading the feet. So if my feet are all the way to one side, maybe you don't need a pump fake, but now somebody's coming over, you got a good shooter in the corner, let's work on the fake pass. You know, you have the ability to do that. So you give them different cues within those small-sided kind of situations and games, and they get comfortable with when to use them. I think that's the most important part. I think it's good to break down a technique early and give the guys confidence on how to do it and how to sell it, but then you have to start adding some bodies in there so that they can get those game-type reps.
Packy, what's your view on that?
Yeah, no, Jay hit it on the head. And it's, you know, it's a lot of eyes. It's a lot of using that ball and then shifting your weight. You know, how can you sell a lie, right? We're out there trying to convince somebody of something we're not going to do. And so we got to be sure that if you don't put your eyes on the rim, like realistically, I'm not biting that you're going to shoot it. If you're not looking in a convincing way, like if I've gone one direction twice and I keep looking that way, hey, I'm likely going to bite that way because you've done it twice already. So if we can sell it, then somebody's going to buy it. So that's what we got to be able to do.
How about Packy, with individual skill development? Sometimes players can get a mindset afterwards that what they're doing is after the catch. You know, how do you deal with getting players to make plays before they catch the ball, you know, sort of the do your work early thing, yep, and then being able to make a play afterwards with the jab step, all that kind of stuff, the one-on-one individual moves, because there's a balance there, isn't there?
Oh, for sure. And then, you know, if we're talking about as we're catching the ball, right, we want to be able to read what's happening and just do our work early. So if we can see like, hey, I've already got space, I know I got to get set for the shot. And now, like, if they are coming out and closing hard, we might now have to sell it and get into something else. And so make sure we're focusing on all our footwork there, but just reading it ahead of time. So we kind of want to read what's going to happen as that ball is getting swing. If I'm in the corner and Jay's up top, I might know that right now I'm wide open. He doesn't have that skip. But if he hits it one more, I know it might be coming my way. So I could just get deeper in that corner to try to really space it and make sure we're going to pull him. So we want to think about different things, like be one step ahead. So the ball's over there right now. I know where likely it could be moving. I want to do my work early. And so trying to get guys to understand in different settings, we can't just be stationary. We can't just be waiting for when it comes our way. We got to be ahead of the game going, okay, it might come my way. If Jay goes the other way with it, I might be backdooring here. So either way, I know like my one or two, three reads that I have to be going through and just kind of walk through it.
You know, Jay, there, I spoke with John Gruden years ago about drills, and obviously football is a different game, but I remember he said something that stuck with me when I asked him about the drills he decides upon or designs. And he said, there are two things that go into it. What do we need to improve on, and what happens most often in a game? So when you're deciding upon player development drills, how do you design them? And then what are the staples that you know, kind of your go-to drills?
Yeah, I think it changes because we have we have all year with the players that we have, right? So there's an off season, there's an in season, there's off days, there's practice days. So depending on where you are, it's a different level, a different stage of things that we're working on. But for me, we're looking at the overall concepts of 5-on-5 basketball. You know, what are our concepts? So if I'm telling guys he's coming off that we want to take one dribble and probe and then kick or get into the paint and here are your reads, I don't expect that guy to rip it back to the same side he came from and pass it back. You know, we want to keep the flow of the offense going. So we'll probably stay away from a lot of rip backs when we know that's not part of our offensive package, you know. So with that in mind, I'm working with my players on individual workouts. You know, what is the overall concept? Where are we going to see our boom drives? Where are we going to see, you know, different drive kick scenarios? So we'll start incorporating that stuff. And then depending on what type of player they are, what position they're in, you know, we know where we can spend most of our time on the basketball court. You know, similar to what Packy said before, guards and bigs, wings, you know, we know where they're going to have the ball or where they're going to be 80% of the time. You know, and the rest of the time, it's being able to not be so locked in, I think, because I think we can get caught up in trying to do everything perfect and trying to marry scenarios all the time. But the game is so fluid. And the way you're going to see Chicago guard us is way different than Boston. And so we have to be able to adjust to all that. So if we create a robot where they're just doing one thing all the time, they're never going to be creative enough to be able to do organized freestyle, as I call it. You know, it's something where we know concepts, but then they have to flow within those concepts. So 70% of the game, you know, is the scoring is happening outside of set plays. So we have to have our guys comfortable in those scenarios. And there's almost 1,000 different movement patterns that players can see throughout a game as well. So I think it's important when I'm talking to my strength coach as to what we're seeing when a guy's getting into the lane and maybe he's weak off of one leg, you know, do we need to start focusing on two-footed finishes there or can we strengthen up those areas and what drills can I do in those areas as well to mirror what they're doing in the strength room?
Packy, how do you design your drills with your clients and the players you work with?
Yeah, well, Jay, the interesting thing you just said there was the strength coach, like pairing it. So I think collaboration is always important, whether it's with the strength coach or with the head coach or somebody on staff, right? So if I'm working with somebody in the league, it's always good if I can connect with somebody on staff as well, because players, one, they see themselves a certain way, right? But I need to also help them bring in the reality of what's your role. So there has to be the understanding of what their role is and how they can best be suited for that. And then we can always expand it, right? That's what everyone wants to do. That's why they get a personal trainer, because they want to kind of do more. But we're never going to get to the more if we don't understand what we really have to do and what that role is. So for me, it's a lot of collaboration, figuring out, okay, what is needed now? Like, what do they expect from you? Can we do these things? Great, so-and-so fouled out. You got four more possessions now. What are you going to do with them? And that might be in that expanded role a little bit. So we got to first make sure we do the thing that's going to get us on the court. What is that? What are we elite at? What is it that everyone expects us to do? Can we do those things night in, night out? If the answer is no, we're never going to get to the other thing that you think you are, right? So it's about having an understanding there, working with kind of everyone in that team to make sure there's a full feel for that. So that's where I try to start to be able to put a package together of like, hey, this is what I think the plan is of what we need to do. This is what you already need to be doing. And then here's what you've expressed to me is what you'd like to be working on. So we give those doses and make sure they're getting a feel for that as well. But first we can't get to dessert if we haven't had our dinner. So we got to go through that first and make sure we're eating our meal.
That's really interesting. So let me make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So initially you would teach to the role, but also working to expand beyond that role. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I might be the backup right now, right? Like, and if I go to Jay and say, hey, you know, I really want to start, like, I really want to take this guy's minutes. Well, here's what's expected of me right now. If I can't do those things, I'm never going to get the chance to take some of those minutes away. So if Jay helps me understand that and get a good feel for that, then I'm going to be ready to go out there and do the things that's asked of me. So I might get a little bit more time when someone's in foul trouble because I'm playing the role that everyone expects me to do. So if I can kill that, now I'm going to be on the court for an opportunity for more. So we got to make sure we're ready. So what is expected? What do teams think I can do? Or what does my coach think I can do? The GM, everybody. So that way now when I'm there, I have an opportunity to maybe get more because somebody else, like injuries, you know, you don't want them to happen, but they do. People get in foul trouble. The game just kind of flows differently. Somebody's having an off night. Okay, now I've got five more touches. Now we get to prove maybe I can do a little bit more.
Jay, what is the player involvement in the formulation and execution of a development plan?
I think you have to have them buy in. You know, there's definitely a collaboration with the player. You know, first thing I ask the player is what they think their role is, what their motivation is, what their goals are. You know, I try to figure those things out. I try to figure out who they are as a player and also as a person, who their favorite player growing up was as a kid, you know, just to see what they're thinking of, you know, because sometimes they try to imitate or replicate somebody that they're not. And so I think it's important to know all those things, to know your player inside and out. Early on when I'm working with a player, I'm trying to give them a little bit of what they want, more of what they want early on, so I can build that trust level. And then I know once I have that ear and they feel comfortable with the workouts, I can give them what they need. And I think that's the transition that a lot of players don't even realize it's happening. You know, they just trust, okay, Jay's got my best interest in mind. And so, you know, I think Kareem said it best, that sweat binds more than glue. So when you're on the court for two or three sessions with somebody, if I was to spend time with Packy, I know within a few sessions, he's going to be my guy because I know he's looking after me. You know, he's helping me get better. I feel good about the process. And so we'll talk about that. But, you know, now after 1 year with Terry, for example, I'm going to work with him and his trainer, Ant, and do a Zoom call on Monday. And we're going to go over some film. We're going to talk about some of the different analytics that I think are important. I'm not going to give them the whole thing because I don't want them to look at, you know, just numbers. But, you know, just see some things where, hey, these are areas you're improved in. You know, these are areas that you were improving in. You know, maybe the number doesn't look great, but the last 20 games of the season, wow, like there was some major improvement there. Here are some strengths. We want to continue to work on these areas as well and not forget that that's what got us here. So I think it's all about collaboration, talking about what the head coach wants. I think that's the most important thing. We all have to have the same message. And so if Coach Borrego, you know, is expecting certain things, I can talk about them candidly about that. Say, hey, just like Packy said, we need you to get on court first. And, you know, just because a player only shoots one shot a game doesn't mean that you're not trying to make 100 threes every practice, right? So you're still going to be working on things to help them get to that next level when they have the opportunity to get in there and they have an opportunity to seize the moment. So I think it's really cool to be able to work with those guys. I think they trust us at this level. They trust guys like Packy and myself when I was in that industry because they're obviously paying for that training. They know that that's somebody they want to work with. At this level, they know that we've been hired to help them. So there's a big trust level already going into it. I never understood why people just don't trust on the onset of things. You know, it's always been a situation where you have to earn my trust. Like, why do I have to earn your trust? Do you go to the pilot and ask them if, you know, where they took their pilot lessons or how many times they landed? I mean, think about how many times we trust people. We trust the cab driver, the Uber driver. So, you know, I think that's the coolest thing is at this level, they trust it. And then I think it's our job to maintain that trust.
That's a great point. You know, we talk a lot about player development, but there's also the professional development of you as a coach and as a teacher. How do you continue, Packy, to develop and learn as a coach and a teacher?
Yeah, you know, being on the private side, right, and not really like on a staff, for me, it's a lot about going around practices whenever I get a chance. So, you know, if I can go watch Randy Bennett and St. Mary's and see what they're doing, you know, he's done a hell of a job with everyone there and his whole staff, as well as just the players he gets and how he makes them fit and work within their system. So going watching him, or it's going up to Cal maybe and watching even the women's, going to Stanford, seeing Tara and the women's there, or whoever it is. There's a lot of teams around the Bay Area, so I'm fortunate enough to be able to be in a network where there's a lot of college, there's some pro, and I can go down to LA and catch some people as well. Phil Handy's a guy that's always kind of looked out. So there's a lot of guys that have been in my space that are now on staffs and are in the NBA. So I've been able to connect and just meet different people. And, you know, I try to just grow that network and be a sponge. I'm never going to know everything. And I never think I do. I always want to be learning. And even today, I feel like I picked up already a ton from Jay here. So it's been great being in here.
Well, Jay, how about your professional development? What do you do to continue growing as a teacher and a coach?
Yeah, the same thing. I try to reach out to people that I respect, that I know are smarter than me. You know, I talk to a lot of college coaches on the men's and women's side, just to get their perspective. I think the game is evolving and changing. There's a lot more zones, and we're starting to see some 1-2-2s and different things to try to slow down teams from getting up the court and be able to start your offense at 11 or 12 on the shot clock. So I think it's really important to talk to them because they see it consistently. It's funny how some of the NBA guys, when they see a 2-3 zone, are like, well, what do we do? You know, and so it's great that now we're starting to see that a little bit more because it develops your game as a coach. So I think it's been good. I think I try to reach out to people in different spaces, whether it's, performance coaches, strength coaches, and talk to them as well to see what they're working on and maybe some of the new terminology that's coming out. I'm reading books on sales and marketing. I feel like it's important for us to know, how to sell a message and how to win arguments sometimes, with players. And that's a big deal. So I'm looking at just trying to develop the whole person because I think communication skills is one of the biggest key factors to being able to grow and eventually become a head coach and be able to take ownership over a whole program. And then the other thing I've been trying to do recently is just I've been trying to give back more, still doing some clinics when I can, coaches clinics. So I'm doing both where now I'm trying to teach on the fly. Sometimes when you do a kids clinic, for example, you don't know if you have 2 baskets, 8 baskets, if there's going to be 2 basketballs or 100. So you have to just be able to go on the fly and still make it work. And then when you're talking to other coaches, you have to be on point every single time. You have to be efficient with your messaging. And so when you teach, you learn twice, So I always feel like when I'm teaching, I'm learning more about how I can be better at teaching and what points I need to really clean up. So I think that's something that I've been trying to do more of.
That's great. When you teach, you learn twice. And one of the great resources that we have now that nobody had when we were all younger growing up is eCoach. And Jay, I know you're very prominent in eCoach and using it and also helping with it. But we've got a clip we're going to look at from a video that Brad Stevens did on inside out moves against the chair. And let's take a look at that now.
Today, we're going to work on a drill with my 11-year-old that we do with our NBA players at the start of a lot of practices. We call it the transition series, and you can incorporate a lot of moves into it. Today we're gonna work on the inside out. Brady is gonna demonstrate for us, but he's gonna demonstrate by coming up to the chair and doing an inside out dribble. As he gets towards the chair, he's gonna break down with his eyes to the rim, act like he's going here, and dribble this way and an inside out. You cannot put the ball, your hand underneath the ball, you have to make it a legal move. So he's here, he's gonna take 1 to 2 more dribbles depending on his age and skill level and shoot a layup. Then he's gonna follow a series that I'm gonna tell him to do. You ready, buddy? All right, so we're going inside out to a layup. Ready, go. Good, nice. Good job by Brady changing his pace as he got to the chair. That's what loses the defender.
Kevin Love stays 5. Settlement skates. Taking the shot.
Now let's go inside out. Let's shoot a reverse layup. This one will be more challenging. Let's see what he's got. Good. Get all the way. Good job. Not bad. He tried the old jump off the wrong foot thing, which, by the way, we're teaching a lot more in the NBA because you got to be creative around the rim to get around some of these big guys protecting the paint. Now Brady's gonna show you his work on the floater. He hasn't shot any floaters today, so give him the benefit of the doubt here. But he's gonna come up to the chair, eyes to the rim, one dribble, jump off 1 foot, throw his knee through his elbow, shoot it up in the air, knock it in. This is a shot that I don't know that I would have ever worked on as a young kid. There he did a great example of a 2-foot floater. And you've got to be able to have that shot if you're a smaller guy to be able to score amongst the trees. Now let's go into a pull-up, shoot a pull-up jump shot, long 2. Here we go. Go, eyes to the rim. Good job. Now the last one, this is fun and games, right? In each workout, you should add something that's just a dream or a fun thing to do. Now we're going to pull up right behind the chair and shoot a deep 3. Just like Steph Curry. There he goes, pull up, pretty good. Brady did a great job of demonstrating the moves. It's hard to make those shots on the fly, especially when you're not loose, but you can see how much better you can get if you practice against the chair.
Jay, what did you take from that video from Brad Stevens, and what does eCoach provide to young coaches today?
Yeah, I love the progression that Coach Stevens does with his son. It's just fun to watch him with his son. It brings me back to my kids. I love the fact that he's teaching the whens, the whys, and the hows, and you know the different progressions of moves going to the rim and finishes. I think that's important. That one-on-one setting where the player is getting comfortable with their body, getting comfortable with the finishes is huge before you can even start getting them into one-on-one or five-on-five settings. Some of the teaching points that I love to make when I'm talking about the inside out, that's one of the reasons why I loved watching that progression, is that you have to have the natural distance before you even start the inside out. You know, I think a lot of times when players get to the highest level, they're so athletic and that gap gets closed very quickly. So I'll take a pool noodle and cut it in half and use that as visual distance when I'm working with my players so that they can feel it, they can see it. And then eventually what happens is they understand that if a player's got great anticipatory skills and they're athletic, that again, the gap gets closed quick. You want to have the opportunity to be able to read and react. So the inside out move in itself is a great probing move because you can see, are they reacting to it? If not, I can go by them. Are they overreacting? I'm still going by. Are they anticipating and trying to jump the inside out? Now I have my cross between or behind coming right behind it very quickly. So I think some of those things are great about the inside out. And eventually what ends up happening is you start talking about the jab step on the inside out. So how's your footwork happening? You know, so if I'm with my right hand and I jab with my left foot, that becomes my push-off step. And then my right foot, my right leg becomes my extension step. A lot of times with younger players, you'll see that jab left, step right, then elongated left again. So by eliminating some of that baby fat, we can start to look at those things against the chair first, and then eventually start adding visual and verbal cues so that they have to read and react. I might put my arm straight out to the side, and that might be a secondary move that they have to make when they get to the paint. It might be a spin move. If I go straight on, that might be, you know, a reverse pro hop or something like that. So they have to start reading and reacting on the fly. Then you start adding the body, and then you start adding secondary help defenders. So it's endless what we can do with these players. And I think with the eCoach platform, it's great because you have exclusive content coming from NBA coaches. You have it coming from assistant coaches in the NBA. They're helping grow the game globally, and it's being taught the right way. I think it's great for every level, whether you're middle school, high school, college kids that are trying to get better, parents of players who want to learn some tips, as well as coaches themselves are going to get a lot out of it. And I love the fact, I think the coolest aspect of the actual platform is that you get to see your favorite NBA players doing the moves after the coach explains it. So you're starting to see it in, you know, game mode and seeing your favorite players do it. And I think that visual in itself is something that no other platform has.
Packy, is there a way, or how do you monitor the progress of player development? Is there a way you can track it?
Yeah. So something that I've been using, and I used it all last pre-draft, was home court. So it's something that we just set up, and it's on a phone or an iPad, and it allows us to track every shot that we take. And so, for example, Jalen McDaniels is actually a guy with Jay out with the Hornets, and he was a guy I had for a pre-draft last year who really had to work on expanding his range a little bit, because in college he's got a great pull-up, but from the NBA three, that's a little bit deeper. And so this just was able to give us a tool that would just help him see, one, it tracks percentages, right? So I don't want him fixating when we're in a drill of like, hey, you got to hit this many. I just wanted us to get reps up. So I didn't even have to count. We could just go see after what we did. And he's just an example of a guy who started at one point and he made a big jump. And Mitch Kupchak was actually the guy who came out and checked out the workout and then saw that, like, hey, this is different. He's made a big jump here. And it gave us a resource that showed that. So it was ability to track it and show it to others as well. And so it's another thing that, you know, with kids I work with, I tell them all the time, like, hey, you may not be 6'10", right? There's a lot of 6'1 or 6'2 guys out there that are just like you. So what's going to separate you? Everyone says they work hard. Can you prove it? And home court, in a way, is a way I think you can do that, because it allows you to track everything over time. So you can see in the 2 months Jalen was with me, he made 30,000 shots. And he's putting shots up, or no, attempted 30,000 shots. My bad. Attempted 30,000 shots. Either way, you could tell he was putting in work and he wants to get better. Right. So when we're doing two a days, now that there's a way to really, like, everyone says they do it, right? Here's a way to prove that you do it. So if you're a 6 foot kid or 5'11 kid, and you're trying to get better and separate yourself from somebody else, it's a tool that I think can give you that opportunity. And for younger kids too, it's just a way to just see things. People learn in different ways, whether it's, you know, doing it themselves, watching someone do it. Sometimes you have to see yourself doing it wrong or correctly to understand it. So it gives us that tool, and you can go back and watch everything. So that's why I think it's a great tool, and it's what I use a lot with kids to pros.
Well, before we go, we're all going through this global pandemic. It has been extraordinarily difficult in so many ways, but there have been, we've had some more time. And so I want you both to give me something you've watched that you wouldn't have watched otherwise, and something you're eating now that you wouldn't have eaten before the pandemic. And Packy, start with you.
Oh man, that's a good one. I mean, I guess well,
I should probably that. Start. I made a mistake. Let me start. I watched Game of Thrones all the way through, which I never would have done absent this. And I started eating ice cream again, which I had given up, and my life was better. But now I'm happier. But I probably put on the COVID-19. Packy, how about you?
You know, I still haven't been watching too much. You know, without sports, it's been hard for me to kind of really get diving into things. And so I'd say I haven't really watched too much. I've definitely read more. So that's one thing that I've done a little bit more, and I've been meditating more. So that's been something that's been good for me. You know, something I encourage a lot of our players to do, and we try to do at the end of all of our workouts. We finish with the MVP, a meditation, a visualization, and a positive self-talk. So I've been able to hold myself accountable to that every day. So that's been good. And then eating wise, you know, my wife has gotten on quite the health kick here. So I'd say I've had more greens and more salads. So while you might put them on, I think I'm down 10 actually myself. So it's gone another direction for me, which isn't bad though.
Geez, you're no fun. Yeah. you're losing weight and reading. Jay, save me here. How about you?
Yeah. No, I'm jealous because I definitely put on the 19 as well. You know, I think I have three females in the house, so I ended up watching Selling Sunsets, which is a basically girl ladies that are selling real estate in the California Hills and things like that. And so they're selling $4 million, $20 million homes. And so I got a little bit hooked on that. I hate to say it. And I was eating a ton of carbs. It was bad. I was everything bagels and cinnamon raisin toast in the morning, every morning. I don't know where that came from or why we started buying cinnamon raisin bread, but I was doing that, crushing that with coffee and creamer every morning. So I have to start weaning back on that a little bit and, you know, start getting a little bit healthier, which I've been trying to do the last week and a half, you know, since I've been back at the gym a little bit more.
Well, on behalf of the ever-expanding Jays and the quickly disappearing Packy, we want to thank you guys for being with us on Junior NBA Coach's Corner. It's really a pleasure to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, Jay welcomes sports psychologist Dr. Tiffany Jones, Philadelphia 76ers assistant coach Kevin Young, Minnesota Timberwolves assistant coach Ryan Gates, and head coach at La Jolla County Day School and the Waves Basketball Club in California, Terry Bamford. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.